Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, friends. Welcome to the Mosaic Life Podcast. My name is Trey Kaufman, and this is a podcast on happiness and why so many of us chase it, and yet we never seem to find it. If you find a value in this particular episode or any episode that came before it, I would greatly appreciate your support, which you can show in a number of ways, the easiest of which is to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That helps others just like yourselves discover the content here. If you're feeling financially flush, you can, of course, make a one-time or recurring donation by clicking the link in the show notes. That allows me to dedicate more of my time to creating better and more interesting content for you to enjoy. Also, I just put out a survey for the listeners of this podcast that will help me better understand you, the listener, and how I can continue bringing content to you that is beneficial to you in your life. I've got a link for that survey in the show notes, and everyone who completes the survey will be entered to win one of the 2 Mosaic Life Podcast t-shirts that I've got up for sale. My guest today is one of the most knowledgeable guests I've ever had the chance to speak with in terms of human optimization. Every time I have the chance to talk with someone about health and nutrition, it's a constant reminder of how holistic our happiness and well-being truly are. Stephanie Foster is a certified personal trainer through the National Academy of Sports Medicine, certified nutrition coach through Precision Nutrition, and certified transformational nutrition coach. She is the founder of Foster Health and developer of the Keto Curious program, which focuses on how to foster the keto lifestyle through education on how to use fat for fuel. She just released her brand new program, All In Curious, which is an intensive 12-week program that dives not only into nutrition, but the other houses of health, movement, and spiritual guidance. Stephanie has not only helped countless individuals lose inches off their waistline, but also transformed their lives by going deeper than just the food on their plate. Stephanie and I have an incredible conversation on sleep, our relationships with food, the ketogenic diet, mindset, our egos, and even psychedelics. And I'm so incredibly thankful for Stephanie sharing her time with me, and I can't wait for you to hear this conversation. Please welcome my insanely intelligent guest, Stephanie Foster. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's, you know, Monday, just getting ready for the week, getting mentally prepared.
That's fantastic. So what does your week look like? I mean, are you in the gym a lot? I mean, how much of it do you spend on your business? How much do you spend, you know, training? And just what's that look like for you?
I usually go into the gym about 5 or 6 times out of the week. That's in the mornings. I try to get that kind of out of the way.
Yeah.
And I do Muay Thai. I just took on Muay Thai about a month and a half ago just to start something different. I've always kind of wanted to feel like a badass.
Absolutely.
So I started doing that. And there's nothing more humbling than starting something new, especially when you get your butt kicked.
Oh my God, absolutely.
So, and then as far as on my business, you know, I spend probably, I don't know, as much time as I can on my business, aside from my day job. So try to, you know, spend as much as I can on both of those.
That's great. So what is, obviously there are so many different types of martial arts. I know Joe Rogan is one of the podcasts I listen to. You know, he's always talking about, I can't even remember what he does now, but I mean, what does Muay Thai, what is the, I guess, how does that differ from some of the others?
Muay Thai is more of like, it's almost like kickboxing, if you will. You know, it's developed in Thailand. And I think maybe you're thinking of jiu-jitsu.
Jiu-jitsu,
sure.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Jiu-jitsu is more of like on the ground, trying to get your opponent on the ground and disabling your opponent as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Muay Thai is more sports related, right? Obviously, it's going to teach you some really great things to implement in real life should you ever hopefully not come across something to where you have to defend yourself. Mm-hmm. But My dad was a Green Beret, so he was very much super excited the fact that I was taking Muay Thai because he wants me to learn all of that.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. So you're liking it so far, aside from the fact that you kind of had an ego check there?
Oh, yeah. No, I like it. It feels really good. You know, I like lifting really heavy weights. That's why I like feeling strong. So Muay Thai is kind of another aspect of that, to kind of feel strong and badass and that I can, you know, take care of myself. But yeah, my shins are pretty, pretty sore. They hurt a lot because you do kick a lot during Muay Thai, but, it's really neat to kind of just learn something new. I've always been an athlete, so I wanted to take up something and start over, I guess.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. Well, I obviously we follow each other on Instagram, and I saw, I think it was either on your story or a post you made, you too have an Aura ring. I don't think that I've ever actually met anybody else, even though they're extremely popular. I don't know that I met anybody else who wears an Aura ring consistently, or at least not that I've had the chance to talk with. How long have you had it, and how do you like it?
Man, I think I've had it for almost, I would say a year and a half, maybe even 2 years. I really like it just because it gives me a lot of insight as to what could affect my sleep. Sleep Absolutely. Is super important to recovery. And, you know, if I'm going to the gym, I'm doing all these things, I need to know how I can optimize my recovery. And yeah, I really like it. It's really interesting because once you start pinpointing what is affecting your sleep, you're just kind of like, you have that aha moment.
Yes.
Yes. You know, and so I was just like, okay, yeah, that makes complete sense. I probably should not be doing that.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's fantastic. So couple that, and I read this book a couple years ago, Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. Have you by chance read that?
Mm-hmm. I have not, but I've heard of it.
It is a book, and I say this as lovingly as possible, that will scare the crap out of you to make you want to optimize your sleep as much as possible. Just, you know, the negative ramifications of not getting enough sleep. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, obviously very bad health consequences of doing so. And yeah, like you, I've been using my Aura ring for a couple years, and just to do my best to do everything I can to optimize my sleep. From I take a cold shower every single day, and I generally try to do it before bed. So that helps, turning down the air in the apartment to make sure that it's cooler at night, to going to bed at a consistent time, to even just checking my heart rate throughout the night. Obviously I don't wake up to do it, but in the morning I like to see, you know, where that is. Just, it's been so fascinating to see some of these details and these metrics to know and be able to kind of compare it with how I feel and know what it is that gives me the best night's sleep.
Yeah, exactly. And people don't really realize that it's not really about like the amount that you sleep. It's about the quality of sleep, right? Yeah. Like, you want to make sure that you want to get at least 6 to 7, 8 hours of sleep. But during those hours of sleep, you want to make sure that you're optimizing it to the max. Like, you're just not having a crappy night's sleep. You wake up in the morning, you're like, I slept all of this time. Why do I feel so groggy?
Right.
It's because your quality of sleep.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's honestly, I don't know, when we talked previously, I don't remember if I told you this, but I quit drinking about a year, maybe 3 or 4 months ago, and for many reasons, but my sleep quality has just gone through the roof since doing so. And a lot of people think, oh, you know, let me, you know, drink a couple of beers, I'll pass right out. But to your point, you're going to get shit quality sleep, you know, when you're under the influence of alcohol versus, you know, when you're completely sober.
Oh, that's so funny that you say that, because that is completely and utterly true. Actually, I noticed when I was 25, that alcohol really impaired my sleep, because it actually raises my heart rate, raises my body temperature. I actually get a slight, you know, anxiety. And this is just from one glass of wine, just one. And I can't sleep, or I'll wake up throughout the night feeling super hot. And so I just have a really adverse effect to alcohol. And everyone differs, right? But again, I wouldn't have had that insight, you know, had I not just started paying attention. And then the Aura ring, when I got it, really pointed that out for me.
Yeah.
Just kind of, you know, laid it out in a visual format. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. So it's not just me thinking that and, you know, making excuses of why I can't drink. And no, I completely agree with you. Alcohol is a big one.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm not much, I shouldn't say I'm not much. I'm really I've partaken in weed on a handful of occasions in my life, and I know a lot of people say, you know, to the same effect that weed helps them sleep. But when it comes to the data, I do remember this being a part of Matthew Walker's book. Like, you still don't get the quality of sleep that you would, you know, just completely naturally without taking any sort of supplementation like melatonin or even other sleep aids. I mean, just a natural sleep is the best possible thing that you can do for yourself.
Yeah, natural sleep is the best possible thing. And there is quite a bit of data that kind of shows that, you know, THC and CBD, too much CBD can actually impair your sleep quality. So it really, you know, some people are like, well, it relaxes me. And then it's like, well, there's other ways to relax yourself in order to get to that point. And then even when you're, you know, supplementing with melatonin, you're actually replacing the melatonin production that you are trying to have with your body naturally. And so you're kind of offsetting what you want to do just on your own, right?
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things where it's like, what other things can you do besides all of this other supplementation that you can just implement, you know, maybe in a night routine, making sure that you aren't looking at your phone or that you're on the computer, you know, 2 hours before bed, wearing your blue light blocking glasses.
Yeah.
And, you know, staying away from things that are excitatory, or even like working out right before bed, a couple hours right before bed, that will actually raise your cortisol levels. And so it's going to be really tough for you to go to sleep, because cortisol and melatonin, it's like a seesaw. If one is up, the other one's going to be down. And so if your cortisol is up, you're probably not going to be releasing enough melatonin in order for you to get that sleepiness and then fall asleep.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'm deferring to you on this, but I mean, you get the same thing when it comes to eating. I know, is that correct? I mean, will eating raise your heart rate if you do it too close to bedtime? You won't necessarily gain weight, but can it not increase your heart rate while you digest the food?
It certainly can. It depends on what you eat, right? And how much you eat. So a lot of the times, if you're eating a really, really big meal, then yeah, you're going to be trying to digest that. And then that's essentially, if you feel like, oh my gosh, I have the meat sweats or whatever it may be, especially if you're eating a lot of carbohydrates or sugar right before bed, that's also going to raise your blood sugar levels, right? And so you really want to be mindful to probably stop eating about three hours before bed. And then just let your body wind down, let it digest, let it rest. And then you're going to be able to fall asleep a lot easier. And having a smaller meal at dinner too, and not just going ham on whatever you're eating and then just stuffing yourself. And so you're also probably not going to be feeling like your best when you're going to bed.
Right.
So it's best to keep them small.
Yeah, absolutely. What are some of the other things you do in regard to optimizing your sleep? And we can really dig into the topic of biohacking, but specifically in regard to sleep, you know, how do you, and when in the evening do you start that process of winding down and preparing yourself both mentally and, you know, physiologically to get a good night's sleep?
Yeah, so I try to eat by, you know, 6:30, 7:30 at the latest. I really try and stay away from anything like TV or anything like that that's going to get my brain going.
Yeah.
And if I do have some work, I do have blue light blocking glasses that are like 95% blue light blocking. People are kind of see me on Instagram and I'll have these like bright orange glasses or amber glasses. And they're like, what is that? And there's different types of blue light blocking glasses, right? There's some that are meant for throughout the day, where it's going to block probably like 50%.
Yeah.
And then there's some that are going to block 95% of that blue light. So that's typically what I do. And then, you know, I take a nice shower as well. I take more of a hot shower just to kind of get my body and my mind to relax a little bit.
Yeah.
I do take magnesium as well. That's going to help relax my body. And so I do that probably, I don't know, about 45 minutes before bed. And then I like to read in bed, you know, even if it's like a couple of pages, I'll read a couple of pages and then I'll just knock out. I'll say, you know, do a prayer essentially and just say my gratitude. Thank you for the day. And I kind of wrap up the day in my head, you know, just telling myself you did good today, you know, looking forward to another day tomorrow. And then that's kind of how I close out the day.
That's great. That's awesome. So what is, I'm curious about magnesium. I've never taken it before. What does that do for your body?
So magnesium, there's actually over like 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, and magnesium is going to help with those enzymatic reactions. But magnesium also helps your body, your muscles to relax. And there's different types of magnesiums, right? A lot of people are more familiar with magnesium citrate, and that's that calm that you find at the store. Essentially, that one is going to, yeah, it's going to relax you, but it's also going to pull water into your bowels. So a lot of the time when people are like, oh, I took this magnesium and man, I just was in the bathroom the whole time. And well, maybe you want to ease up on the
Right,
citrate, right? One
right.
that I use is magnesium glycinate. There's some that is bisglycinate, and that one is going to be more gentler on the body. It's not going to pull as much water into the bowels as well. And that one's more bioavailable for your body to actually absorb. So that's a good one. I think everybody needs to have magnesium because it's just we're so nutriently deficient in it. A lot of the food is not going to have it, even if you go organic, whatever it may be. Sometimes you do really do, you know, have to supplement with vitamins to get and minerals to get that.
Yeah, that's good to know. Yeah, I'm always curious when it comes to supplementation. I've experimented with a handful of different things. Some I feel like I don't get a lot of benefit from, or even notice a difference in. But at the same time, I want to make sure I'm giving my body everything that it needs. And I don't remember if we spoke about this last time or not, but when it like vitamin D, I've been supplementing that for consistently for several years. And then when the research came out that people who have the most Who get the most detrimental effects from COVID are the ones that are vitamin D deficient. So I've been taking that. I've taken fish oil before. What are some of the other supplements that you can't live without that you take daily?
Yeah, I would definitely say that, you know, fish oil, your omega-3s, right? That's one that we definitely need to take. Our diet typically is super high in omega-6s. We want both ideally, but we want them to be equal. We don't want omega-6s, which is, you know, the pro-inflammatory oil to, you know, outweigh the omega-3. So we typically have to subsidize with the omega-3 in order to meet the omega-6s that we normally intake. I also, magnesium is huge. That one is like, I take it everywhere with me. If I am going out of town, I take it with me. You know, I used to struggle from IBS, and so that has worked wonders on my gut as well to kind of help me go to the bathroom whenever I'm traveling. Another one that I take is, yes, vitamin D. Everybody is absolutely deficient in vitamin D. We spend 90% of our day indoors. So we're not outside getting the vitamin D that we can from the sun, right? So it's one thing that we, of course, also have to supplement. And then I do also take a multivitamin that I get from a specific company that actually will swab your DNA and see what you're deficient in, and also do like an intake for a questionnaire for a lifestyle. And they also will take your blood work. So they essentially make up the multivitamin to include anything that you might be lacking that's more specific to you. And they make it in a way that you can actually pretty much uptake it really easily. A lot of these multivitamins, you end up just not absorbing them, you just peeing them out. So it's essentially you're just, you know, peeing out money. And that's why I kind of went with this route and tried to take that every single day as well. But supplementation is something that we shouldn't, right, lean on too much. It's kind of the cherry on top of everything.
Absolutely.
You know, we're gonna have those gaps and holes, but if you've got everything pristine and perfect, then yes, like definitely include your supplementation routine. But if you're still lacking in eating the right foods, moving, getting outside, all of those, you know, basic things, then you don't want to rely too much on supplements to, you know, be the whole foundation of your diet.
Yeah, and I think what you just said is so extremely important that a lot of people, I don't know, you are the expert in this area, so I want you to tell me your experiences. But it seems to me a lot of people say, "Oh, you know, I go out for I work out 5 times a week, but I'm not losing weight," or, "You know, I eat healthy, but I'm not working out." Just it's everything is so holistic and, you know, so cyclical. You have to take care of every aspect of your life and your body to be able to have that good feeling all of the time. And that's kind of the mentality that I've taken over the last few years, from diet to exercise to even sleep, just to make sure that I know that I'm going to be able to perform optimally every single day. And it seems to me that so few people realize that you need to do better in each area of your life and not just one of them.
Exactly. Yeah. It's one of those things where you got to have the foundation, right? You got to make sure it's like building a house. You got to make sure that you have a really good foundation before you put the walls up, before you put the roof up,
right?
You know, and paint the inside and make it look pretty, right? So it's really building on top of those things and making sure that, yeah, if you're going to the gym 5 or 6 times out of the week, that's awesome. But what are you doing, you know, for the rest of those hours throughout the day? If you're only going to the gym for 1 hour and then you're sitting down for the other 23, well, then that's probably why you're not losing anything. You need to be active. So, you know, having little bites of exercise throughout the day can actually be shown to almost outperform just that 1 hour of exercise at the gym, because you're just steadily moving your body throughout the day. So you're going to actually burn more calories by doing that. And it's something as simple as just, if you're going to the grocery store, don't try to find a parking space right at the front. Go ahead and park at the back and just walk. You know, having those steps is going to add up. Or maybe if you are, you know, on the third floor of your building, right, for work, then taking the stairs instead of taking the elevator. All of those things, we don't think that they add up, but they really, really do. And just those little tiny changes can really help in terms of movement. And then nutritionally, it's just really taking a look at your diet.
Yeah.
You know, are you eating processed foods? Are you kind of going at the easy route and just taking takeout? Are you eating out a lot, restaurant foods? You know, because you don't know what they put in there, and they can be loaded with, you know, inflammatory oils. They can have sugar in the sauces that you're not really aware about. And so, you know, you're doing all the right things, right? And a lot of my clients are like, I don't understand why I'm not losing weight. It's like, well, you think that, you know, there's this many calories or this much sugar in there, but you just don't know,
right?
You're not in the kitchen. You're not behind the scenes seeing what's going on. And so all of those things matter. So let's take a step and maybe start eating at home, start cooking your meals more. Then you know what you're putting in there. So that's another step too. And, you know, something that I also really think goes into it is mindset, right? We have the right mindset going into these things and really being gentle with ourselves and giving ourselves grace. And a lot of the times we're so hard on ourselves. You know, we really are trying, and then we beat ourselves up when something doesn't work out. And it's just, it makes me so sad when I hear a lot of my clients, you know, they're just like, oh, I'm still fat. I'm like, well, you lost 60 pounds. What do you mean? Yeah. Look where you're at. You congratulate yourself. So taking those steps to where, like, if you are implementing all of these things in your life, like, you're doing an awesome job. That's amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah. It. You're right. I don't think people give themselves the opportunity to celebrate the small wins, because it's those that are going to compound and, you know, get you to that point that you're looking to be. I know you, I mean, your big focus is the ketogenic diet. I mean, you work with people to help develop meal plans and lifestyles around the ketogenic diet, correct?
Right. Correct. Yes.
So I,
No, the ketogenic diet has been something that I found 3 years ago, and I definitely like to implement that with my clients, especially if they're coming from, you know, a typical standard American diet. And
absolutely,
it's something that I'm very passionate about. So I'm glad you touched on that.
Yeah, for sure. And it's something that I've been fascinated about over the last several years. I've heard about it all from all the podcasts. Everybody on the West Coast is talking about, you know, how this is a life-changing diet. And I've tried it before. And I did enjoy it. I remember always being hungry when I didn't have carbs in my diet. And so I have never really struggled with weight all of that much. So I sugar is something that I cut out of my life a long, long time ago. So just knowing that I was able to remove that and, you know, maintain the weight that I wanted was sufficient for me. But I know people that have had such tremendous and incredible, you know, impacts on their lives from trying that diet. And I'm just, what does that look like for you when you take on a new client who wants to try the ketogenic diet? How do you work with them?
So typically what happens is, you know, again, it really depends on where they're coming from, right? Most of my clients are going to be coming more from the standard American diet. They're going to be overweight and they really just want a change, right? They're really tired of feeling tired. They hate looking at themselves in the mirror, all of these things. And so what I typically do is I don't really like to toss somebody in the fire and just, you know, I'm going to completely change your world, you know, overnight. And then they're just going to be like, oh my God, you know, they get overwhelmed. Right? Anything new is kind of overwhelming. And when you just open up a whole new world for them, they can fall off the wagon pretty quick. Yeah. So I'm really not there to set up my clients for failure. I'm really there to kind of help them along and guide them on their journey. Right. And anytime that you're starting something new, it is a journey. Yeah. Muay Thai has taught me that. It's a journey. And so with my clients, what I typically do is I actually get them through a detox first, right? So I focus on eliminating, you know, the 7 primary inflammatory foods. And this can include corn, soy, dairy, gluten. Alcohol is definitely one of them. Yeah. Inflammatory oils, right? So, you know, these things are some of the ones that I take out of their diet. And then, you know, eating whole foods is another thing too, making sure that we're not eating processed foods as well.
Right.
And a lot of the times, you know, a lot of my clients, they do really, really well with that. And they already see results just from taking that one small step. And it also primes the body to be able to go into ketosis a lot more easily, and it's going to be a lot more of a gentle transition rather than just like, oh my God, you know, take everything out. And so that's what I typically like to do. And then we go into the keto diet where they feel a lot more confident in doing that because they've already taken that small step, right? They're not taking this giant leap into a completely different lifestyle than what they've been living.
Yeah. That's fantastic. So when it comes to, because I think what attracted me originally to the ketogenic diet was the allure of having more energy, and you kind of, because I mean, the idea of the ketogenic diet instead of burning or using sugar as an energy source, it uses fat as an energy source, correct?
Yeah, essentially what you're doing is you're switching fuel types for the body, right? So we are primarily, you know, sugar burners because we are eating carbohydrates. So we have essentially what's called glycogen stores. So whenever you eat carbohydrates, you are basically turning them into glucose. And then if you're not using that glucose, you actually will be storing them in form of what's called glycogen. So think of carbohydrates as a tank. So whenever you deplete that tank and your body will primarily run on glucose, then what you have to do is your body is just like, okay, shoot, there's nothing in the tank. What do I do? What do I turn to? I've got to keep myself alive somehow.
Yeah.
And so when you deplete your body of all of that glycogen, then it's going to turn to other stores or other forms of energy, which is you have an umpteenth amount, thousands of calories on your body, no matter how lean you are, as fat. And so what your body has to do is it actually has to develop or make what's called ketone bodies. That comes from your pancreas, ketone bodies, in order to convert fat that's stored on your body or that you intake as fuel. And this is a survival mechanism that your body turns to. And so essentially, yes, you're going to be burning, you know, sugar. And then now we're actually going to be switching that source and burning fat for fuel.
And where does, so did, have you noticed a lot of your clients getting that extra energy boost from that? I mean, where does that actually come from a physiological standpoint?
So that comes actually from the ketone bodies, right? Your brain primarily runs off of glucose. And so what happens is that, again, you're not getting a lot of glucose coming in, right? And so again, it's switching, has to survive off of something. So it survives off of those ketone bodies. And so those ketone bodies are actually almost like a really just cleaner source of fuel, right? Think of it as like just like rocket fuel versus your normal gas that you put in your car.
Yeah.
So they just feel this like this, just not like high per se, but you just feel almost like a buzz, like a really steady source of energy. You feel mentally clear, right? A lot of that clarity that comes through. You're not having that brain fog that you typically have. And so that's what they get from that. And essentially, in order to get there, and people don't realize this with the ketogenic diet, it's like, yes, you need to have your carbohydrates under 25 grams of carbs, right? And, but you need to make sure that the fat is there. Essentially, you are pretty much like, again, it's that seesaw, right? Yeah. If you're having a whole bunch of carbs, then you want your fat to be lower. But if you're having low carbs and then you're just supplementing with protein, your body can actually convert protein into glucose via a mechanism called gluconeogenesis. So again, you're not really getting the fuel that you need. So you're going to feel super tired. And that's the difference between, for example, the Atkins diet and the ketogenic diet, is that with the Atkins diet, it really just promoted protein and just low carb, but it didn't really say you need to have a lot of fat. So whenever people are starting the ketogenic diet, then really focus on making sure that about at least 65% of your calories comes from fat, because that's your source of fuel. If you're not feeling good, then you're probably really low on that. Yeah. And so that's something to also take a look at.
That's fascinating. And yeah, there's been so much nutritional research over the last 5 or 10 years, especially, you know, there's that whole study on fat versus sugar, and how the sugar industry, you know, paid for that research that, you know, basically bastardized fat. And so coming to a new understanding of, you know, what that looks like for what we need to intake, I mean, I think a lot of it probably has to do with mindset and changing people's minds when it comes to, you know, what exactly they, not what they believe they need, but what they actually need to, you know, feel good and to live a healthy lifestyle.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny that you mentioned that. You know, the food industry is something that is, whenever people get to a place where they're severely obese or whatever, and they just really blame themselves and they're really hard on themselves, you know, I like to say it's like, yes, it might be, you know, you're obviously putting the food in your mouth, but like, they're setting you up for failure. Right. There's all of these ads that, I mean, you see food everywhere. You cannot escape it. It's on billboards. It's on TV. And then the way that they actually make these foods, they make it addicting. Yeah. Right. They really kind of, you know, they actually have food scientists to see how can I actually make this as addictive as possible, you know, with, you know, hitting certain areas of the taste buds, right? And really digging into the science behind that in the brain and how that can be addicting. And so that salty sweet mechanism, having carbs with fat, is super, super addicting. And it's something to where, like, of course, you know, that's probably going to set you up to go that route. And it's really not 100% your fault. And even again, going back to what you said about that research, you can really cherry pick research. You have to understand who is funding the research. What kind of bias is there? And so, yeah, it really pointed towards, you know, there was those two studies, and the one that really, you know, got the forefront of it all in like the 70s and the 80s and the 90s was, oh, you know, it's fat. Fat is the one that's going to be, you know, raising your cholesterol levels, and it's also going to, you know, make you have worse heart disease. And so we need to have low fat. And that's where you had the low fat craze.
Right.
And what they did is, you know, whenever you have low fat in something, it tastes awful. So what do? You add sugar in order to make it taste better.
Yeah.
And so anytime that you're at the store and it says low fat, look at the sugar levels. They're probably going to be pretty high, you know, in order to compensate for the lack of taste.
Yeah.
You know, fat is delicious, right? And so we don't really understand that fat is really necessary for just hormone balance and hormone health. And it's you need that for your body. It's not a bad thing. And I don't like to demonize carbohydrates either. Carbohydrates are meant to use as a tool. All of these things should not be demonized. We just have to understand how they actually work within the body and what we want to do with them.
Absolutely. And it still blows my mind that their packaging is still marketing that low fat mantra. It just goes to show how much of a pull or an influence that the sugar industry still has. And because it's obviously still working, that people are buying these products based on, you know, the marketing and the packaging.
Oh yeah. And that's old school mentality. And that takes a long time to really unwind. Right. And now that we're a lot more aware of that now, and we're a lot more educated in that sense, and internet has helped, and nutritionist coaches have helped, all of these things have helped. And, you know, keto was not that super popular when I first started in 2017, right? Like it was pretty hard to find anything keto related or any packaging that had keto. But now it's making it a lot more available, a little bit easier to transition into. And I think a lot of people are starting to become quote unquote woke around what, you know, nutrition should be. Right. Yeah.
So talking a little bit more about mindset, I'm curious, and I've had this conversation previously. How do you feel about moderation? Do you think moderation exists? For me, I don't think it does. And like I mentioned, I quit drinking. I mean, I don't compromise on that. I quit sugar several years ago. I don't compromise on that. I mean, to the extent where if I'm at a birthday party, I'm not going to touch cake. Like I don't want to eat anything with added sugars in it. I mean, do you generally allow people a quote unquote cheat day? That's for me, that's, I know if I compromise on that, that will hurt my mindset. That will hurt my, you know, motivation to continue, you know, living a healthy lifestyle. But I know not everybody is that all or nothing, like I can be or like others can be. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, with any of my programs, especially like my Keto Curious program, I never ever mention the word cheat day. They don't get one. It's not something that we talk about. It's not even whatever, because you're already setting them up for that quote unquote cheat, right? That just already has this connotation of, oh, you know, it's almost like a reward or something like that, or I'm gonna, you know, have this little thing, and it's one of those like forbidden fruits, and you don't want them to even think about food like that. Like we need to have a more better relationship with food rather than looking at it as a treat, as a reward, as a cheat, as bad, as good. Food is food. Food is simply there to help nourish your body. And you need to make the decision on, is it going to help me towards my goal or is it going to take me away from my goal? And that's what I tell my clients. I'm like, you can totally have that pizza if you want to. You can totally have that roll if you want to. But always ask yourself before you do that, is this going to help me towards my goal or is this going to take me further away from my goal? And then when you come to that conclusion and you stop that process of, oh my gosh, it's a forbidden fruit, right? And you just start asking yourself these questions and you're really debating on this. Once you make up your decision, okay, it's going to take me away from my goal. Is it worth it then? Is it worth those 3-2 minutes of eating whatever that may be, this chocolate cake? And then, you know, right, for afterwards, you're not going to feel that great. You might have, you know, again, that blood sugar rise, your heart rate go up. You're going to feel awful and sometimes guilty, right? A lot of shame comes with that because whenever we think of the word cheat, then we feel guilty or we feel shame after we actually do that action. And so we really have to get behind the emotional aspect of this quote unquote cheat day, which is why I never mention it in my program, not even once.
That's great. I highly respect that. I really do. And people, I don't know, I'm not a nutritionist. I know what works for me. And, you know, a lot of people are, like I said, they allow themselves to get into this, I guess, the mentality that, oh, this is for my mental health. I'm going to eat, you know, this candy bar because it's going to make me happy. Well, you know, it may make you happy in the short term, but what are the long-term ramifications, like you just said? And so, that's very much why I am all or nothing. And I don't want to be seen as an extremist, but when everybody else has this mindset that every once in a while is okay, you know, everything in moderation, I don't know how to change that. I mean, it's very difficult to question somebody's values and beliefs when it comes to food. Food is weird in that sense. Like I don't see food as being, you know, let's break bread together. I see it, like you said, it's nutrition. It's supplementation. It helps me have energy. And so I've never known how to kind of combat that or, you know, go into that conversation and say, I guess you do you. I don't know.
Yeah. And it's funny because you have to really understand your personality type too, right?
Right.
You know, normally type A people are very much, you know, in or out. Yeah. And type B people are more go with the flow, right? So if you have a cheat day or if you cheat and you're type A, then most likely you're going to be stressing out so much over the fact that you had something. And then you're really just going to drive, you know, those that stress level up, and it's really going to just kind of go way against you. Even if you just had that little bit of whatever, you're just going to go over and over it with your mind, and it's going to set you up for failure. Versus type B people, they're just like, if I want it, I want it. If I don't, I don't. Yeah. You know, I'm very type A, so I'm a very black and white person. I'm either in or I'm out.
Yeah.
But my best friend, she's very much, if she wants a piece of cake, she's going to have a piece of cake, but she goes throughout the whole day. She might fast for however long, and she's more intuitive with her body.
Right.
So she doesn't really gain the weight because she's more intuitive with her body, and she moves and she does all the other things. Right. And she doesn't stress out almost at all throughout her day, period.
Yeah.
And that's where type B people kind of get a little bit of that extra footing, right? Because they're not stressing out day to day about other things.
Yeah.
So your stress levels also really, really make a difference when you're, you know, for nutritional value or losing weight or whatever it may be. Stress is super important to understand as well.
Yeah. Stephanie, I have had nightmares that where I've eaten like something that I knew I shouldn't have. And I woke up in a sweat because I knew that that was not part of who I am. I've literally had nightmares because of that. So I think I very much fall into that type A personality.
Yeah. And it's crazy because, you know, how I got into the ketogenic lifestyle was actually not through losing weight, but because I had IBS, and I had no idea that the stress that I was going through and trying to figure out what foods had caused my IBS was also just making it worse. Right. And that's one of those things where if you're stressing out, if the diet is stressing you out more than it's probably, if you're not seeing results, then maybe you need to kind of switch things up or maybe work with a coach or something, somebody to guide you and make you feel less stressful and take those weight off of your shoulders. And that's super important too, because stress is a silent killer. It really is. You can't measure it. You can't look at it. You can't see it. It's just there. And so that's where mindset really kind of comes in order to make sure that we practice, you know, different things to get our stress levels down.
Absolutely. Well, I love talking about mindset, and I also love talking about, you know, how that affects us day in and day out. And when we spoke initially, we talked briefly about this, and I want to touch on it before we start to bring things to a close here shortly. But we talked about psychedelics, and that's something I'm extremely interested in. Not something I have a whole lot of experience with, but it's something that, to me, it seems like there's become a lot more acceptance of across the country, perhaps the world. You've got influencers like Tim Ferriss and Joe Rogan, other podcasters talking about their experiences with ayahuasca, with psilocybin, and just the profound impact that it's had on their lives. You've delved slightly into that realm, have you not?
Yes. Yeah. Actually, just started late last year. So just a few times.
What have your experiences been?
So to kind of give you a little bit of background on my mental health, I've actually suffered from depression and anxiety clinically since I was in college. And it was one of those things where I moved away. I had my 3.5-year boyfriend break up with me on just a moment's notice for no reason. And just a lot of change in my life happened and my world just shattered. And it was like a switch went off in my brain. And that was my story for like the longest time. I was just always depressed. I couldn't move, get out of bed, or I couldn't even perform. I was actually a scholarship goalkeeper in college, and I was, you know, set to be starting goalkeeper. And I lost my position because I just could not function, you know, and I also had to take anxiety medication. And so that was always in the background. And eventually when I got out of college, I was able to get off medication, thank God. But that was already part of my mindset,
right?
Looking at things through a different lens. And for a long time, I was really ashamed of my depression and anxiety. And I really just kind of shunned that idea of me. And there's just a lot of things that I buried really deep down inside. And I just kind of saw myself as like this rainy cloud. And, you know, I'm just so introspective. And, you know, I'm an introvert, you know, which that's another thing that I would kind of hide. Anybody that I would tell, oh yeah, I'm actually an introvert. And they're like, really? You're so outgoing. And it's like, no, I actually get super drained when I'm around a lot of people. I like to be, you know, more quiet, but I have to turn it on in order to be accepted by society or to be accepted by other people or in my job. And so it turned off a part of me. And when I started dabbling a little bit with psychedelics, it was more to accept me, to look at myself through a different lens. And what psychedelics do is they actually help with the help the subconscious come to the forefront and let the ego kind of go in the back, right? Take a back seat. And the ego is always telling you what you should do, you know, what you need to do and, you know, what you're not. And it's just, it's really, it's that chatter in your head that beats you to absolute pieces.
Yes.
And that's a lot of what happens with depression and anxiety, especially anxiety. You just go through this whole loophole, over and over again in your brain. And what that does is these lets the, subconscious come out. And you essentially are more of a neuroplastic space, essentially. So pretty much those neural pathways that you've developed over time of thinking negatively or whatever, just think of it almost like as a river, right? And it's digging through the earth and eventually it makes these deep canyons, right? So now you're trying to shift with therapy or with whatever, right, over time or thinking positively, trying to basically dig out this tiny little trench that goes from, you know, that giant massive canyon. It's hard, you know? And so, and so what psychedelics enable you to do is to just kind of, you know what, I'm just going to, instead of digging with a tiny little shovel, I'm going to take this massive, you know, truck and just start digging with that. And it's a lot quicker. It just speeds things up because you're not having to work against the ego.
Yeah.
So that's what it's enabled me to do, is instead of putting down myself for having this background, this story, right, is kind of really almost embracing that part of me, embracing the fact that I'm more deep, embracing the fact that I am more introspective, that I do think a lot. You know, that's not something to be ashamed of, but it's something to be proud of. Everybody is different, and that's completely okay that I'm an introvert and that I do think a lot. And that I am sensitive. And it also brings to the forefront some of the things maybe in your memories or in your childhood of like, oh my gosh, you know, I actually slouch a lot because whenever I was little, I was told that I'm too much or I'm too sensitive or I'm too loud or too bossy. So I make myself small, right? These are some of the things that actually came out from that psychedelic realm. And it's super important to make sure that you are with people that are, you know, super, that are professional, right? Absolutely. In a sense, like they have done it. They are what they call facilitators, and they are there to help you to make sure that you're having a good experience. Not kind of, you know, not saying to not do it on your own, but if you're doing it for, you know, therapeutic effects, definitely make sure that you are in a safe container and that you are in a safe space because, you know, those, that energy can really be disrupted really easily if, and you're kind of in a sensitive spot if you're not doing that, if you're not taking mind to that.
Yeah. Well, was it psilocybin that you've tried?
Yeah. Psilocybin.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Ego is fascinating to me. It's something that I didn't realize how much of a role it played in my life, especially through my 20s. And I really didn't, I mean, I didn't know what it was. I didn't know it was a part of me until, honestly, until I read it. And I'll ask you this question here in a moment. Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday. That was my life-changing book. That was kind of the impetus that helped me become the person that I am today. And I'm so grateful to Ryan and to that book for changing my life so much. And for the longest time, I just wanted to, after I realized that, you know, ego is very real, I wanted to beat it down in submission. I wanted absolutely nothing to do with it. I wanted it to just go away. And so I became overly, I guess transparent, vulnerable. I asked myself every time I made a decision, is this the ego making this decision for me, or is this me? You know, what are my motivations for doing something? And just the everything I've heard about, either ayahuasca or psilocybin or even DMT, it allows you to see your ego as a separate entity. And I guess the goal isn't necessarily to beat it down in submission, but to be able to work or to walk alongside it so you have a symbiotic relationship with it. I mean, is that the experience you've seen in regard to your ego, to in regard to your experiences with psychedelics?
Oh, 1000%. You know, the ego is part of you.
Yeah.
Right. And so by beating it down to submission or wanting it to die or not having it be a part of you, you're essentially kind of closing the door on part of yourself. Right. And you want to embrace the whole of you, all of you, including the ego. The ego helps you to, you know, push yourself, or the ego helps you to, get better at something, or it's a driver for you in your life. It helps you. It can be a tool, just like carbs, right?
Right.
It's not evil, but you can use it as a tool, but don't let it take over, right? Just like with sugar, don't let sugar take over your life. And then you get to this point where you're obese, you're inflamed, you feel like crap. It's the same thing with the ego. You know, don't let ego take over your life. Otherwise, you're just going to feel like crap. You're going to feel down. You're not going to feel like you're enough. And you're going to beat yourself to pieces because you're letting the ego take control. And so what, you know, psychedelics enable you to do is to kind of say, all right, ego, just take a seat. Take a moment. Go in the back. I see you. I'm not getting rid of you. But let other parts of me come forward, so that I can better understand those parts of me. Because when you're just shouting at me the whole time, I can't hear anybody else. I can't hear the other parts of me. I can't hear my vulnerable self. I can't hear my loving self,
yeah.
Right? That's super important too, when the ego is just shouting at you the whole time, right? And you can get into that space too through meditation, through spirituality, through all of these different mechanisms. You don't have to use psychedelics if you don't need to, but it's really kind of taking a moment, especially with meditation. This is what I try to do every single day. Take about 15 to 20 minutes and just sit.
Yeah.
And there's so many different guided meditations that you can get for free online or through an app, but sit with yourself and try to let the ego take a back seat and just be with you. Yeah. Find out other parts of you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I love the way you said that, you know, inviting the ego to take a seat and to observe, and to your point about meditation, one of the most powerful exercises that I've been able to learn through meditation is, you know, when you have a thought, and this is what everybody says when, you know, you tell them you meditate and they say, oh, I can't do that. I can't, you know, think about nothing. And that's not the point of meditation. The point is to be able to you have a thought, say, okay, here's a thought. Let's remove all judgment from that. Where does this thought go? Where does it come from? And then just let it go. I mean, just let it float away naturally. Let it just move on. And when it comes to your ego, and to me, the ego is just, you know, is the one that's, you know, planting those thoughts in general. And that's honestly one of the biggest reasons why I quit drinking, is because whenever I would drink, the ego would just become inflamed. It would become outraged. It would, you know, make me say all these things that I felt so confident in, but they were never a true part of who I was. And so I really love the way you described, you know, just allowing the ego to take a backseat to your life. That's perfect. I mean, it really makes the most sense to me.
Yeah. And then you can call it when you need it, right? Like
yeah.
Maybe you're at the gym and you're just like, all right, I need somebody to push me.
Yes.
You can get that out, right? You can even give it a name, right? You can, there's different facets of you,
yeah.
Right? We are all multifaceted. We all have different parts of ourselves, but the problem is that we only get to know one. And sometimes that one can go against us many of the times. And we need to find other parts to serve us during other parts of our lives. We're not always on the gas pedal going 800 miles per hour every
right.
single day. That's why we get so shot, right? We
yeah.
get so retired, we get stressed and all these things, is because we're just go, 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 go. And that's all we're taught. That's what
yeah.
society has basically, you know, taught us to, you got to be this, you know, millionaire. You got to have your own company. You got to do all these things. And it's just like, what happened to just like enjoying life, the everyday? What happened to that?
Yeah.
You know? And so whenever we get into that mindset, it's just, it can be too much. And then on your point on meditation, a lot of the times it's like, yeah, people have this misconception that whenever you're meditating, you're supposed to be blank. And it's like, no, that doesn't quite happen. Yeah. You know, it's think of it as you're walking into a theme park and you have all of these roller coasters going around you, right? Yeah. And basically grabbing onto a thought means you're getting on that roller coaster and it's taking you for a ride. Yes. And when you're meditating, you are watching the roller coasters instead. You're not getting on it. You're not taking it for a ride. You're just like, huh, okay, there's that one. That one looks cool. Right. Keep walking. There's this one over here. That one looks interesting.
Yeah.
All right. You know, you're not getting on it and you're not going down the loophole. So it's noticing the fact that the thoughts are going to come through 1000%. You just can't get away from it. It's just don't grab onto the thought. And then that leads to another thought. And then you go down this whole rabbit hole, just like the roller coaster.
Yeah.
So just taking a step and just observing the thoughts. And a lot of people will akin it to, you know, oh, it's like clouds going across the sky. And sometimes that's hard to like implement, right? It's a little bit more difficult. That's why I kind of like the theme park analogy. But it's almost like thinking of, these are not my thoughts
either.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, these aren't really my thoughts. They're just coming out of nowhere. They're just there.
Yeah. Your analogies are on point. Those are absolutely phenomenal. Thank you for that. I know this is this can be very sensitive because technically I think in the vast majority of the country, you know, psychedelics are not legal. But I mean, if you have a piece of advice for just having somebody learn more about, you know, what that might look like for them, because I think, you know, for myself very much included, I don't really know where to start. We talked about, I do have an interest in DMT, the jarring experiences that people have, the spiritual journey that takes them on, but I don't know where to start. And I know I could do research, but you know, you mentioned, you know, finding somebody you trust. I mean, you didn't use this word, but finding a shaman, finding somebody who can guide you through that experience. I mean, what, if you could offer practical advice for finding something like that, what would you say?
That's a really hard question. You know, I am just kind of in this kind of healing space, right? The nutrition world, the biohacking world. So it's pretty popular in that world. And I know a lot of amazing people there. So, you know, it's one of those things where most likely there is somebody near you and you just don't know about it. Right. So it's almost like this quote unquote underground speakeasy. So ask a simple question, you know, ask me or ask, you know, somebody in the space or whomever, like, you know, that might have dabbled with it, that they've talked about on their podcast or their book or whatever. Just be like, hey, where can I find it? And do your research too. Make sure that this is something that you really feel a calling to do. Don't force yourself to do that.
Yeah.
If you have, you know, any type of hesitancy, really lean into, why do I feel hesitant? Is it because it's new, or is it because it might be a lack of control? That was what it was for me. I was like, oh, there's no way that I can do shrooms. I have a very, very active imagination, as you can tell. So my fear was I was going to get, oh, I'm going to have a horrible trip. I'm going to see all these weird things and just freak out. And it didn't happen for me like that, but because I was in a good container, I was with, you know, professionals, if you will. Yeah. And so, yeah, like I said, just reach out to whomever that you follow that is kind of in that biohacking space and ask the questions, and no one's going to frown upon you, especially in that space. It's super safe, with that. So unfortunately I can't give us too much as like, you can go on YouTube or you can go on Google and just say, you know, search up like, all right, psychedelics, who can I find?
Yeah. And I certainly would not recommend that, on a podcast, but no, I appreciate that. So I guess one of my closing questions is, I always like to, obviously this podcast is a tool, it's a resource, and you are extremely intelligent and knowledgeable and, you know, provide incredible resources to your clients and to people out in the world. You know, if you were looking for a resource that would enable you to continue growing, and let's just say somebody in Wyoming happens to hear this, say, hey, I can help her. What would that resource be? How can they help you grow?
You know, I would just point towards podcasts really helping me grow.
Yeah.
I'm really like, it's an honor. Thank you so much for having me on here. Absolutely. It's just one of those things where listening to other people and their journeys have really given me the courage to go on my own journey, to really just kind of put that fear behind me and reading books or actually like more audibles. You know, I drive around a lot. So yeah. Audibles are kind of my jam, and just listening to different journeys and different everyone else's different perspective really helps me. Everyone's, your life is going to be different than whomever's, right? That's just the way it is. But knowing that someone else already did it is going to help you be able to contextualize that, okay, if they did it, I can do it. Just like the man who ran the 4-minute mile. It was like that was once, so I forget who it was, but once they broke that 4-minute mile, then man, all these people, all of a sudden out of the woodwork started breaking that 4-minute mile. And that was the one thing that was thought impossible.
Yeah.
But because other people saw that it was possible, your brain will be like, ah, then I can do that.
Yeah.
So really listen to an audible that I really enjoyed this past couple of months is Green Lights by Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
He actually reads it. He reads the narrative. So his voice is obviously just amazing. But his life was phenomenal. That man was fearless and he came from nothing.
Yeah.
And look where he is now. So just looking at other people's lives really kind of helped me to get out of my little hole.
That's great. And so, you know, naturally, my follow-up question would be, you know, what book would you consider being your life-changing book? And it sounds like that's the book that it was.
That audible is, you know, I don't know if it was like life-changing for me because I just read it, but it definitely gave me a different perspective. And then also Daring Greatly by Brené Brown.
Okay.
She's absolutely amazing. She's also a native Houstonian, so yay that. Daring Greatly also was a really, really, really great book. So I would recommend both of those for sure.
Fantastic. Well, Stephanie, I truly appreciate you. I appreciate you coming on here. If people would like to connect with you, if they'd like to learn more about what you're doing or even just the ketogenic diets, you know, what's the best way for them to reach out?
Yeah, the best way. So I have two platforms that I'm really on, and that would be Instagram. So you can find me there at foster.health. And you can also find me at Clubhouse. It's just pretty brand new, but foster.health as well. If you have an iPhone, you can actually still download it. Android users, I'm sorry. You can also find me at foster-health.com. That is my brand new website. So I just launched that last year. So I'm super excited. So go check me out there as well.
Awesome. Well, Stephanie, again, thank you so much for coming on here. Thank you for everything you do. I truly appreciate it, and I appreciate you, and I look forward to hopefully continuing our conversations into the future. And if there's anything I can do for you, please just let me know.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me on here. It was such an honor, and I appreciate you doing this, and thank you again.
One more time, I would like to extend a huge, huge thank you to Stephanie for joining me on the podcast. I love having these conversations about how we can continue to optimize our lives for the sake of health, for the sake of well-being, and to me, most importantly, the sake of happiness. If you would like to learn more about Stephanie and her Keto Curious program, I highly encourage you to reach out to her on Instagram at foster.health, and her website is foster-health.com. And as she mentioned, she's also on Clubhouse at foster.health. And this is embarrassing. I don't know how to link to a Clubhouse profile. So if you're on Clubhouse, search for foster.health. Again, I want to thank all of you for taking the time out of your busy lives to ask yourselves how you can do better, and by, of course, sharing your time with both Stephanie and myself today. My one ask for you as we close, if you have just a few moments of spare time today, please click the survey link in the show notes. I'm just trying to better grasp who my listeners are and how I can continue serving you better. Everyone who completes that survey will be entered to win one of the Mosaic Life Podcast t-shirts, either the Breathe About It t-shirt or the Do Better t-shirt that just came out. If you'd like more podcast content, you can follow me on Instagram at Trey Kaufman. You can check out the website at themosaiclifepodcast.com, and you can follow the podcast on Facebook by searching for The Mosaic Life Podcast. Thank you all again so incredibly much, and until next time, take care, do better, and be well.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.